This episode is brought to you by Chiefs on Broadway. There's a different way to experience live music in Nashville. Eric Church's Chiefs on Broadway is home to the Neon Steeple, an intimate live music venue in the heart of downtown Nashville, where artists and songwriters take the stage for up-close, unforgettable shows. From stripped-down sets to surprise guests, no two nights are the same. Check out the Neon Steeple lineup and get your tickets now at chiefsonbroadway.com. It's June, and we believe there's no time quite like the summer to enjoy some country music. BGS is leaning into all things quality country with our sister site, Good Country. This month's edition of Good Country highlights Artist of the Month, Jody Messina, and we have sit-downs with Braxton Keith, the Broody Brothers, and Ashley McBride. Dive in at thebluegrasssituation.com/goodcountry. Hello and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation. It's me, Cindy House, your host. So happy to have you here. Today we have our final recording from the Keyamo Cruise. It's a round table with some of our favorites, Reese Palmer, Rose Cousins, Kaya Cater, and Joby Riccio, doing a sort of folk state of the union. Before we get into that, let's talk about ways that you can stay in touch with Basic Folk. You can sign up for our newsletter at the link in the show notes, or you can go to basicfolk.com and there is a red sign up for the newsletter button. You can also follow us on social media at Basic Folk Pod. We're on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, mostly Instagram. And also, we are a listener-supported podcast, so if you would like to make a contribution, you can go to basicfolk.com/donate, and there is also a link in the show notes to do that as well. All right, let's get into it. Well, is this not an excuse to get the girlies together if we've ever heard one? For our final live interview aboard the Keyamo Cruise, we arranged a check-in with some of our favorite folks to talk about the state of folk music, which includes folk-adjacent music. We have country artists and hosts of Color Me Country Radio on Apple Music, Reese Palmer, Canadian sweethearts Rose Cousins and Kaya Cater, and Joby Riccio. Let's just get right into it. We talk about a lot of different topics. It's a really inspiring and fun and serious conversation. We speak to the function of folk songwriting in modern times, the hope and confidence of Generation Z, the inspiration taken from elders, the fact that there are Black people in the future. Thank you, Hat Tip Alice Randall. Let's get into it. It's the Folk State of the Union, recorded live on the Keyamo Cruise on Basic Folk. Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to Coffee and Conversation with Basic Folk.
How's everybody doing? Yeah, this is the last day, so we're there. Well, thanks for coming. My name is Cindy House.
I'm Lizzie Noe, and we are the hosts of Basic Folk on the Bluegrass Situation podcast network.
That's right, yes. Yeah. So we are a podcast. You can find Basic Folk wherever you get your podcasts. So you can open up your phone if you have the internet and subscribe now if you want to.
Am I correct in saying that everybody on this stage right now has been a guest of the pod in the past?
Yes. Yeah. At least once. So these are our besties on board. So we brought them on board to have a little round table. But before we get into that, I just want to say that if you are not familiar with BGS or the Bluegrass Situation, we're a media organization that have articles, video, social media, and you can follow us along at thebluegrasssituation.com or at the Bluegrass Situation on social media. And Basic Folk is a part of the Bluegrass Situation. We're a podcast. We have honest conversations with folk musicians. And we have been on Keyamo. This is our third voyage.
Our third adventure with you all.
Yes, so
give it up for all of you for welcoming us.
We'll be releasing the conversations we have recorded this week in our podcast feed, so be sure to subscribe so that you can take a listen. We talked to Dawes,
Abraham Alexander and Cassius Culpepper, and then we'll be releasing this conversation if it goes well.
No pressure.
No pressure. All right. So today we're asking the question, what is a folk song for? Is that the correct grammar? We have any?
Yes.
Grammar? Okay. All right. No.
I have a literature degree.
I should have asked you before I submitted it. Yeah. Okay. So here we go. So first of all, let's introduce our panel. We have Joby Riccio.
Hello.
Joby.
Rose Cousins. Kaya Cater. And my mother is here today, Reese Palmer.
Yeah!
Fun fact, Reese and I traded earrings before we came on stage.
Aren't they cute?
I know we weren't supposed to say anything.
She looks fab.
Yeah.
She looks fab.
They're just perfect for our outfits. It was God.
Okay, so let's get into it. We have noticed some folk songs coming out recently about moving forward and persevering despite living in some hard times. And it seems like the folk zeitgeist is coming together to collectively say something. And we'd like to explore, like, what's happening with folk musicians at this time? What is the function of folk songwriting in modern times in the year 2026? Is it for comfort, information, inspiration?
We believe that folk music is a very important genre because it reflects our culture and society back to us through lyrics and music. And we're living in a time where the right wing has waged a war on empathy itself. So focusing on the realities of human experience, people's working conditions, people's real emotions that sometimes we're afraid to share, those are some of the biggest parts of folk music for us. And folk music is supposed to be an umbrella that catches everyone. So there needs to be a story for everyone that's part of it.
Yeah, and we're saying it's okay to feel your feelings.
It's okay.
It's okay to feel.
Feel big.
That's right. Yes. Round of applause for our feelings.
We're allowed.
So these artists are telling these stories are basically taking care of communities in a way that's kind of like similar to healthcare workers, but like how are those workers being taken care of? Like, what's the state of your workplace and how is care being taken and what does it feel like to be moving through the world playing for music for people at this time? So I guess like the first question is like the name of this panel, like what is the function of folk songwriting in modern times? Like, what is your job?
What's your job, y'all?
Okay, yeah, I'll go. Well, I mean, I think that when y'all were talking, the first thing I thought of was like the idea of a griot. Mm-hmm. Like, if you all have seen the movie Sinners, right? It's the idea of someone who kind of like is a memory keeper and serves as like a rallying point for a community to gather for a second and to pause and to feel, as you were saying, right? And I think like in our modern era, we are being increasingly driven toward efficiency. You know, like why make your own salad when you can have like a chopped salad for you and you don't even have to do anything? Or like, you know, AI, like why take the time to write maybe an email that's a little bit less perfect when you can just throw it into ChatGPT and have it feel, you know, exactly right? But I think maybe in folk music, we've been spared that because, I mean, all of us on stage, we're making a living, not a killing, right?
Generous.
If you can call it a living.
Generous, yeah. Yeah, we are in many essences working class, maybe climbing towards middle class. But I think there's like there's a way in which, yeah, we are, I don't want to compare us to like doctors or nurses, but like we are care workers. Mm-hmm. And I think like because I started as a banjo player and a folk singer-songwriter, I didn't aspire to be like a huge pop star. I think I had like an understanding of where my career would likely land. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just being like okay with that most of the time. Yes. Not all of the time, but yeah.
I was just going to add, so I've been more in the country Americana space. And as far as like, what is our job? I'm going to quote one of my mentors and someone who I think of as a black country music griot, and that's Alice Randall.
Yes.
And one of the things that she said that I think about all the time is, especially as black country artists, black Americana artists, part of our job is to make sure that we let everybody know that there are black people in the future. There are people, meaning there are people of color in the future. Yes. And because we have been written out of so much of the past and so much of the fabric of the music that, you know, that is folk, that is country, that is rock, that is mm-hmm. all these different genres, even classical music. To make sure that we are, well, I think that number one, we are the canaries in the coal mine.
That's correct.
And so whatever is happening to your local musician is a pretty good indication of what is coming for the rest of the job markets. So as we see AI starting to, oh, you can make a demo on your app and it's a fully orchestrated thing. You have killed a studio. You have killed studio musicians. You have killed background singers. An engineer. Like, you have eliminated about 52 jobs just by doing your little cute demo on your app.
And all disrespect, we can hear it.
Yes.
You can hear the difference.
Your demo sucks. No, but...
I feel I can tell when something's made with AI. It really sounds like...
No,
just
but...
Just medium.
Yeah, but just overall, I think... My job in particular is, yes, Francis, we exist. And we will exist 20 years from now, 100 years from now, whatever. Now, what is there for us to exist in is a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. But we are here. So, yeah.
Yes. I think also I was thinking while Kaya was talking about... sort of this like streamlining of life, I think there's also this numbing happening. And what you guys were talking about at the beginning of it's okay to feel things, it's also important to feel things so that we can process and move through things, so that we can fight against things and organize. Because I genuinely think that if we don't like rest and care for ourselves, and part of that is knowing when to step away, but also like, you know, getting back up again and being brave enough to hope and believe in the future, because it's worth believing in and we have to. But I think that there's just like this numbing out, and a lot of it is this, obviously, because it's addictive. And I've lived with that for probably longer than anyone in this room, maybe. Mm-hmm. I got my first iPhone when I was in middle school. Humble brag. and I hate that. Hate it. And folk music is, in a lot of ways, the antithesis of that. And I hate that we're like relegated into the social media space. So... And I know so many of you go see live folk music because I see you at the shows, so thank you. Yes. Bring the next generation with you, please. Mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to... I found folk music on the internet. I found folk music on the radio.
And the radio is dead.
Wait, what?
The radio is dead. The folk music is not on the radio anymore. Unless you're listening to the syndicated Folk Alley radio show hosted by...
Hey.
Cindy House.
No, but this is such a good point. Folk music spreads through word of mouth, especially in our digital age. Hearing a real recommendation from a real person that you really trust is like worth 35,000 Instagram shares.
Yes, and followers, because that stuff is not real. Sorry.
Preach, Joby. I love it. Rose, do you want to talk about what your job is? When you get on stage, what do you think, like, clocking in?
I guess I kind of just consider, like, the way that I kind of experience writing is down to, like, the microscopic parts of what it feels like to be in a particular emotion. Mm. It is so deeply uncomfortable to be in what's happening in the world, and I'm just kind of like, what is it, the thing that is connecting us? And it's likely grief, probably in its heart. And we can take that grief all the way up to whether we're talking about what's happening politically, or we can take it just right down to when we're like going to bed. We're like, what, you know? So I think I consider my job to be the instigator of a connection of the people with themselves when they come, hopefully with someone that they may have come with, right, or that they know or don't or do not know, but like some kind of communion with everybody and with ourselves, to be like Eva said, like, we do have to have our emotions because they're there. If we avoid them, they're going to turn into an ulcer. So, I think that's what I consider it. Like, I need that communion. Mm-hmm. And so to be the instigator of whatever soup or stew of emotion that we need to kind of do, whether it's like some kind of non-denominational church of emotion, some kind of supermarket of emotion that we go to collect, to fill our baskets with whatever we need to nourish that part of ourselves.
So I have a broad and scary question that y'all can choose to answer however you want, which is that politics are not just the capital P ideals that we read about in the newspaper. It's everyday interactions that are shaped by power. It's the culture that we're all surrounded by, even when we don't notice it. And as musicians, like Reese said, we're often the canaries in the coal mine. You guys are out there on the road meeting hundreds to thousands of people each year, and your relationship with your audience, in a way, is a part of your politics. So what are you noticing these days? Have there been shifts in the, you know, political atmosphere as you're out touring? How are you feeling you're relating to your audience these days?
Okay, I'll go. Okay, so it's funny for me, because I've been in this since... My debut came out in 2007, so we're almost 20 years in, right?
But you're only in high school.
I know, but I'm only 12. It's a crazy thing. I don't really understand. I have noticed. Okay, so for me, my debut album is a country album, and it's so funny. Social media was not the thing. It was like MySpace when I first got started. And so, yes, MySpace. ye olde MySpace.
I miss it.
And so we didn't, like, you know, there was no status or anything like that. So, like, nobody really knew what my personal politics were until I said them out loud. So there were people that just fell in love. Oh, this idea, this little curly-headed black girl that sings country. It's so cute.
Aww.
And she's so lovely. And then when social media happened, and like I was just like, yeah, so this shit is fucked up.
Yeah.
And like and everybody's like, what?
I can relate. It's almost as though the looser your curl pattern, the more you're supposed to be quiet and demure.
And cute and like and precious. And like, you know, you fit in. My favorite thing that a radio person told me once was like, you're not black.
Oh, totally.
I'm like, oh, honey, I am just black enough. But I have found that the relationship, because everything is so social media now and everything is very like social media warrior behind the keyboard, you have the safety of being user 5666235 and no picture. People will say the craziest stuff to you and will write you and tell you on your own damn page not to say, I think you should take this down. I liked your music, and I didn't want to talk about politics, and I don't like your politics, and blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't like yours, so here we are. Like, but I have found, it's become like this really aggressive thing, and like, you're going to use it against me, and I'm like, I'm good. Like, as long as, I mean, you already bought it, so you already own the CD. So, no givesy backsies. So, it's become like some of the relationships have strengthened and have lasted for years.
Yes.
And then some of them I have deeply disappointed people. And I don't know. I think I embrace who embraces me. I've gotten to that point. in my life where I'm extremely grateful for those who just love Reese as the package and all my thoughts and you know, awkwardness and all that. And everyone else, I'm so sorry that I've disappointed you, but
No, that's a beautiful acceptance. It's a beautiful outlook.
Yeah. I would say the same thing. Like, you know, it's I feel like I adjust, depending on where I am, like I might adjust what I might or might think that I would be able to talk about on stage, or like generally I'm not super politically loud, but I definitely like to point light at things like on social media. And I definitely have had people who are like, I didn't come here to find it, you know, and I'm like, that's fine. It doesn't, you know, it ultimately doesn't matter. Like we, the people who are on this ship have chosen to be here because we're here. We're all here for this purpose of like, we love music.
Yes.
And in the end, it doesn't matter. You don't have to be in an exchange with people that you don't have, you know, and you can point light at, I think that's like how I consider, like, I'm going to point at things that I think are relevant and poignant and terrifying and that I'm worried about and concerned about, and then be in a conversation with the people who you want to be in the conversation with, and do your best to use your platform in a way that, you know, feels comfortable for you and safe for you.
Yeah. It sounds like you both have figured out a way to shape who your audience is by being who you are and letting everyone self-select. I'm going to be taking that tidbit of advice in my career as well. I think that's really beautiful.
I would say that generally what I've found is that people are louder behind the keyboard, mm-hmm. like you're saying. I am lucky that I've only really gotten a few angry, nasty emails. Mm-hmm. I got one recently from a man, presumably in Colorado, that included like a gif of Trump at the end. It was
not
psychotic. And it was because anyone who knows my music or has been to my shows, I'll play this song called Wildfire Season, and I talk about climate change and thank you and the climate crisis, and I'm very outspoken about it. And it's like, I would work in climate if I wasn't doing music. Like, that's what I would do. My first job, I was a climate canvasser. Like, this is something I care a lot about. I talk about it, I fundraise for it, blah, 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 blah. This man wrote me this crazy, insane email that's not even worth talking about. But anyways, his email was outdoor life. At AOL.com. I know, it's just like the cognitive dissonance of this. So,
not at AOL.
AOL.
At AOL, yeah. I love that that's what
gift,
stuck.
The hatred, the AOL of
it all.
That's
my generation.
But like, he wasn't willing to come have any sort of, I mean, I'm kind of glad because I had, you know, merchandise to sell at the table. But he wasn't willing to come have like a dialogue with me in person. Like, he just wrote me this insane email. But also in general, I find that people are so relieved that I am outspoken, and they're, especially younger folks, who come to the show with their parents or elders, and they're like, that song or, you know, other songs that have, that feels exactly how I feel right now, or that are songs about like, that I have that are, that speak to like the lockdown or other things that people in my Gen Z life have gone through. Like, people want catharsis for all of this. Like, they want a place to move through it. And I think they want a third space. They yearn for the town square. You know what I mean?
I yearn for the town square.
There was a lot of blank looks out there, but Lizzie yearns for the town square. So like, I feel like I don't regret being politically outspoken. No one's making me do this. I'm happy to do it because I also, not for nothing, I went to shows when I was younger and I saw young femme artists doing this, modeled to me, most of them Black people, people of color, most of them queer people, speaking out, playing amazing music. I think about bands like Lula Wiles.
Yes.
That
inspired the hell out of me. Artists like Carsey Blanton, like they're the model to me. They're who inspire me. And I just like the fact that it matters to people. Like I'm kind of rambling at this point, but I just
love it, Toby.
I think that like it means something to me to speak on something that matters on my heart. Like I don't know. I think it's always worth it and I don't regret it, and it's worth it to be brave and to take the risk. And I'll take every angry, weird outdoor life email guy. Like whatever, man. I could take it. I can block his ass. Like it's fine, you know? I've fundraised thousands of dollars for a badass climate organization and I'm not going to stop.
Yes.
And I'm singing like a frog.
I mean, all these folks have made like incredible points. I don't have much to add except that, like, to your point about being like a young femme musician or for those of us on the stage that started off like really, really young, I think what I noticed in my early years, like 22, 23, was there was kind of like a predatory gaze that I didn't really know how to identify, but it was this thing of like, you know, you're like a young black mixed race woman playing this instrument. This is what we could do with you.
Yes.
This is if you sign this record deal, or like, you know, if you sing this kind of particular song, or if you sing other songs that we want you to sing, this is where your career could go. And so I think, you know, for me, there was a lot of that outside noise. But I think internally, it made me realize like, oh, these people don't know me. They don't know who I am. They don't know that I grew up at folk festivals. They don't know that like I have a particular value system that maybe at 21 or 22, I couldn't articulate, but like I knew in my core of who I was. And I think that made it so that I was like able to follow my particular path in songwriting, but also I let some opportunities go that maybe would have made me more money, but also maybe would have made me much sadder as a person. And you know, I think like really from my perspective, every time I speak on politics on stage, I feel like I'm speaking from human experience. I think there's this like we can like take this magnet of politics and like put it up here, but I think like really, really what it is about human experience and pain and grief and certain people being denied civil rights. You know, I'm thinking about trans people in Kansas, right, whose driver's licenses were taken away, you know? And so I don't know, I think like when I'm able to think about that in my songwriting, that feels human to me too. Yes. Yeah, and so I don't know. I just feel like that's the way that I connect with myself and I connect with other people. And I think increasingly, like, my audience has shifted. And I think some people have, like, left the Kaya Cater path because they didn't like what I was saying. But I think I also then was able to invite a bunch more people in who felt like, okay, this is an artist who I feel sees me, even though she may not know me. You know, and you know, to Joby's point, like I think those are the artists that I gravitated towards too as a young person, and I think there's work that we're doing that it's not gonna come to fruition for a couple of maybe decades. You know, like we're playing the long game. I think of Maya Devitri saying like I make my records for people who might hear them long after I'm dead, right? Yes. So I think it's kind of like that long arc of history that we're maybe thinking about.
Beautiful.
Question for the KMO folks. Has Maya played the boat?
What?
Oh, she has?
She has.
Let's get her back.
Let's get her back.
Maya Devitri, everyone. Maya Devitri. Look her up.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So how do y'all feel about the progress or impact of folk music now versus, like, in the past? Like, how do you think folk music helps to impact current social or political movements?
There's probably an advantage to, like, when I started in the 1900s, there wasn't there wasn't social media. There was, you know, like people were sending out newsletters, you know, and it was really incredible. So there's this evil thing, like Joby holding up her phone. It is, the phone is just this like evil, horrible thing. And also, the fact that folk musicians are in the realm of sharing things just like any other genre, mm-hmm. there is like, it's the double-edged sword of being able to kind of share wider and further and quicker and reacting quickly to what things are, you know, what things are happening in the news or what things are, yeah. I think that that's probably one thing, if I think of the arc of my career, which is just about 20 years, it's the way that things can be shared is probably advantageous. Like, there is an advantageous part of it. Mm-hmm. It's also horrible.
Yeah. Like, Reese and I wouldn't know each other if not for Twitter.
No, it's
but
true.
But then again, I also wouldn't know hater-ass jerk 1, 2, 3, 4.
Right.
It's like you take the good with the bad.
At AOL.com.
Yeah. Right. Angry man 66. No, I...
Traditional values and I don't like you, 189.
I think that... I was born in 1981, and my parents were, you know, very much a part of, grew up in Atlanta. And so they were very much a part of the civil rights movement that was going on in Atlanta. And I didn't grow up then, but, like, we played the music in my house. And so I grew up, you know, listening to protest music, listening to Joan Baez and all these different people. And, I see this moment right now. Now, mind you, it is not happening in mainstream music so much, but I hear it, like, if you know where to look and you know where to find the music. I have heard, like, especially like over this cruise, I am so grateful. I don't ever get to go see shows, and so I've gotten to see so many people play, and I have heard some incredible music about what is going on right now in the world. And so I feel, you know, as a 44-year-old mom, I feel really good about the music that is my child. My oldest has available. I think folk music is in a really good place and a really healthy place. And I think that the future is in good hands. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at you.
Yeah.
And like, I'm looking at you. I'm looking, you know, all the people on this panel. I'm looking, Lizzie, all of y'all. I'm looking at y'all because it's in a really good place. As long as everybody is feeling good about being honest and really reflecting and really thinking. That's the thing. Like, it's not just like things are bad and I don't like it. Like, it's like, it's a hit. No, but like, y'all really think about it. And like, it's extremely thoughtful and it's thought provoking. And it's just like, I have cried more than I probably should have this week, mm-hmm. and felt. And so I think if you look beyond your local radio station, or yes. you look beyond, you know, what Spotify DJ sends you, and you actually like dig deep, there is so much good, thought-provoking, inspiring, sparking music that is happening right now. So I think it's good. I mean, it reminds me a lot of what I think, you know, the 60s must have felt like.
Yeah.
Because everybody's like, it touches all of us. It's going to touch all of us. And so And I just one last thing, and I'm going to be quiet.
Don't be quiet.
Not really, but I'll kind of be quiet. The other thing, I hate to make everything about race, but everything is about race.
Yeah. Go there.
Especially in my genre, I see people being okay with being black or being a person of color, being Hispanic, being Asian, whatever. When I got started in Nashville, the first thing everybody told me was not to talk about it because it's obvious. And it almost felt like there I had to choose. You're either going to be a country singer or you're going to be a black woman. But like, you have to choose which one you're going to be. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that anymore. And that makes me really happy. Like, I see people like Pinkbeard.
Yes.
And he is everything all at once. Mm-hmm. And that's And that's the way it should be. Yes. Like, that's the way it should be. You shouldn't have to choose one over the other. Rhiannon Giddens is another person that I see that doesn't choose. Like, she is all the things at the same time. And so that's really inspiring to me.
No, that's beautiful.
Really,
it's been a change.
It's really relieving, totally, Reese, about like the seeing the confidence that young people have in sharing and the platforms that there are there.
Yes.
Like, it really is, like, if I think about when I was, you know, starting, or even when I was in high school, like, I can't imagine having the confidence of being everything that I was, mm-hmm. or like was trying to either avoid, or, you know what I mean? There is, I don't know, there's less need to fit in, but there's just more room. Like, there's more room for the bad stuff too, but there's just more room for, yeah. And I'm so glad that you said that, because that's what I've been saying to my friends on the phone, to be like, I can't believe the confidence of the
yes.
people in the artists in their 20s is just killing it. I love it so much. I can't even imagine being that confident.
Well, something that I've learned, like, over just like being in the middle of this, like, beginner to more experienced artist, is that, like, you do get offered those deals. Like, if you can get along with X, Y, and Z group, if you can keep quiet about X and say more about X, if you can dress X, Y, Z way, there are a million ifs, you know, you can have success. And I think economically, as folk artists, we've learned there's no carrot left. There's no reward left. So you might as well be who you are from the beginning. And like, the younger generations are picking up on that. There's no reward for keeping quiet anymore. Oh, and I have a question. What are some values you all have learned from your folk music elders? And like, who are they? Who are your mentors and elders? Elders.
Name names.
Put it out there.
People are giving you some examples.
Thank you so much. Someone shouted out Pete Seeger. Someone shouted out Mavis Staples. Geez, Odetta. So many wonderful artists I'm thinking about. I actually just saw Mavis Staples at the Beacon Theater in New York.
Woo!
81.
Amazing. Yes.
With Kimaya Diggs?
Yeah.
Yes.
And Alison Russell. Yeah. So I mean, I guess I will say, like, the person who taught me how to play the banjo, his name is Mitch Podolak, and he founded the Winnipeg Folk Festival, and he was a staunch Trotskyite. And three goals in life were, or maybe two goals were, to cook good barbecue and teach people how to play the banjo. And you know, we formed an unlikely friendship. Like, he was, gosh, maybe 65, and I was like 11 or 12. And he gave me my first banjo lesson, and he also was just... encouraged me to travel and go to North Carolina and study a little bit more, and he also, you know, he founded a folk festival, and a folk festival it's a community, right? And so, you know, Mitch passed away a couple of years ago, but I think of people like that in my life who just like helped me along my path. I will mention, you know, we mentioned Rhiannon Giddens. Like, Rhiannon gave me a lesson backstage at the Ottawa Folk Festival, you know, when I was 13 or 14. And she has always invited me into her circles, into her world. Alison Russell, again, like, I just think, like, for me, like, I mean, friggin' Rose Cousins right next to me. Like, Rose pulled me up on stage when I was probably around that same age, 14 or 15, to play a song with her. And, like, I idolized, still idolize her. I mean, who wouldn't?
Don't we all?
You know, and so I think it's just, at least for me, it's like small things along the path that encourage me, people who encourage me to keep going. And, yeah, I think, like, that kind of longevity, which I keep talking about, but like, that longevity that folk music has and that community that folk music has is like so precious. And I think I can like start to forget it when I'm on social media too much. Like, I can start to do the compare and despair thing. Mm-hmm. But I think once I'm like in the room with you all, and you know, I'm reminded that like, you know, it's all bread for the journey. So yeah, that's it. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I think the cool thing about folk music is it's like, and like I said, I learned about folk music on the internet first and then on the radio as well. And so first it was like this thing that I learned about and loved in my room. And I learned all these songs and I sang along to them. And then I went to my first folk festival, my first bluegrass festival, Rocky Grass in Colorado. And I met kids my age who played these weird instruments like me. And I got my first weird instrument, the mandolin, and I was weird. And I was like, and it was amazing. And I saw the Carolina Chocolate Drops play at Rocky Grass. And I was like, oh, this is a whole world. And it includes people of the, and this is a whole, yeah, like this is a whole universe of, this is a whole history that I have to learn about. And I was inspired to become a folk music history minor in college. Ooh. After. But also, I think there's also, like, that's so dorky. there's like elders that I've been, you know, lucky enough to have a personal relationship with, who, like, I mentioned that band Lula Wiles, they became friends of mine and brought me up on stage in Boston and had me play one of my songs at one of their sets at Great Scott. And it meant so much to me because they were my superheroes in Boston. Like, they spoke out about political issues. They were cool. Yeah. They shredded. And I was obsessed with them, and they thought that I was cool, and I was just like over the moon about it. So I had this personal relationship with them, but there's also artists like Nina Simone, who obviously I do not know. but I feel, yeah, but I'm also so inspired by, and like just the idea of, and like we're going back to the idea of like, what are the values that you've learned, like speaking truth to power. I know people talk about that a lot, but I always think about Nina Simone, and thinking about like going on YouTube and watching videos of her performing, and just the chills that I had on my body. And I'm on YouTube in the computer room in my house. Like, it's just like, but just, yeah, just being so moved by what music can do and the bravery, and just being like, this is an important way of transmitting a message and getting people together. And then also music as community, and learning that through going to Rocky Grass and moving to Boston and meeting Lula Wiles and meeting, you know, all the people in the Boston music scene who brought me in and included me and uplifted me for the very first time. And then having that happen in Nashville too. So those are just a few people too. And I mean, I've shouted out Carsey too. She's a huge one for me. Yeah.
I just want to take a moment for Rose and Joby and Kaya. I don't know, Reese, if you know him, but I want to shout out Matt Smith from Club Pasadena.
Yes.
Oh, Matt Smith. What a guy.
So Matt Smith is the managing director at Club Pasim. I feel choked up talking about him right now. It's his 30th year at Club Pasim, and he basically is, I feel like, single-handedly making the Boston folk scene vibrant. You know, I don't know if anybody wants to take over talking about Matt so I can sit over here and cry.
Aw.
But anyways.
I'm working with Matt on a very special event coming
Hell
up soon.
Yes.
We are all a folk music family, and that's the cutest part. That's all I had to say. Speaking of family, I have a question for Black women. How is being a roots musician shaping how you see yourself as an ancestor?
No, I feel a very, I personally feel a very deep connection to particularly the women that came before me. So I'm like in the second part chapter, you know, artistry is like, it is a roller coaster. It ebbs and flows. And I feel like I'm in the second chapter of my career. And this particular part of my career, I feel, is very much focused on, like, if I had a word, it's legacy. And, you know, with the radio show that I have, I named it after Linda Martell's album, because Linda Martell and I have a very, very similar story in terms of the way things went with our first albums. Mm-hmm. And had it not been for me being able to self-fund myself and the internet, mm-hmm. for better or for worse, I would probably be somewhere in North Carolina driving a bus and raising babies too.
Yes.
And so I felt like it was really important to tell that story. And so in having my radio show, Color Me Country Radio, on Apple Music Country.
Listen up, y'all.
Tomorrow at 2 p.m. I have had an opportunity to meet so many of my matriarchs. And in meeting my matriarchs, I think I see myself more clearly and, like, where I fit in all of this. You know, I've had an opportunity to talk to Anita Pointer. I've had, Rihanna's been on my show more than she probably, at this point, she's like a co-host. Yeah. And, you know, and we, and she's welcomed me in, and we have a book coming out in May. And that's a children's book, and it's about Black women and women of color in country music. It's called Color Me Country. Yes. And so, you know, and I've had Allison, I've had Kaya, I've had you. And, I've had an opportunity to talk about Ruby Falls, Lenora Ross, LaMel Prince, and Elizabeth Cotton, and so many other, Etta Baker, and, like, just so many different people that made it possible for me to sit up here and talk my stuff, yeah. and be okay. And so, yeah, I see... I feel extremely empowered mm-hmm. in this moment at times when it doesn't feel empowering. And I see my place as I'm trying to create the next generation of legacy makers.
Yes.
And people that talk about, it's like a quilt, like quilting is in our community, like great grandmas used to make the quilts out of all the old clothes and like that kind of thing. I kind of see myself as a quilt maker. And I'm trying, everything that I do is to make sure that y'all don't have it the way that it was for me and the way that it was for them. So, yeah, that's how I see it.
Beautiful question, beautiful answer. And speaking of elders, I've been thinking a lot about something that Taj Mahal said, which is that we are never in the shadow of those who came before us, but we are always in their light. And, you know, Elizabeth Cotton is someone who I have draw great inspiration from. And I even think about, like, you know, the lineage that I come from, like the Caribbean women who I come from, you know, and I think about my great grandmother who was not allowed to go to school, and so she taught herself how to read and write off hours in the schoolhouse with chalk and slate. And then my problems seem a little smaller, you know, when I'm like, oh, I can't get that gig. It's like, well, maybe that's okay. And so, you know, I think when I'm at my worst, I'm kind of small-minded, and I'm in my, like, ego brain, and I'm like thinking, you know, I am owed this, or why didn't I get this, or I'm working so hard, you know. And then I think, you know, for me, like, doing work with ancestors and elders is, it's always about zooming out and seeing the bigger picture. And, like, speaking of Taj, like, I'm opening for Taj in April, right? Like no, but it's not to be like, yeah, good for me. But it's more just to say, like, when I hope that I'm still playing music in my 70s and 80s. And when I am, what am I going to be doing for the people who are coming after me? Always trying to think about that. Like, what am I doing for the people coming after me? Like Reese said, to make it less difficult. Right? Because, like, that's what my great-grandmother did for me. And that's what I want to do, even if I don't have biological children of my own. Like, that's what I want to do for the people coming after me. And I think that's how we are, like, links on a chain.
Thank you guys for joining us on this stage. For
so
Basic
great.
Folk.
So if you'd like to share, who are you all listening to? Who are you reading? What are you watching?
Nothing. No. Oh, no. I'm actually here. This is fun reading, ladies and gentlemen. I'm actually in the middle of this book I bought. I heard a podcast. They were talking about. I've been very focused on. We were talking about this in the back. The way that beauty standards have been molded by some really gross predilections that some people have. You know, like the very Epstein vile-ish. And like the way that we view aging and sexuality and all that kind of stuff through this really kind of sick lens. And so I found this book. It's called Brown Sugar. How Black Women Have Been Sexualized Over the Ages. It's like it's a college text, but it's really good. So I've been reading that. As far as like what I'm listening to. So for the radio show, I make my own playlist. I think I'm the only show on Apple that doesn't follow the regular playlist. I make my own. Mm-hmm. And so I'm listening to a lot of different people. So here are some people for you guys to check out. There's an artist out of Kentucky. His name is Chris Linton. Mm-hmm. If you are very into like Merle Haggard and like and that that ilk of country music, he is that guy. He technically was a coal miner and all this. Like he's just incredible. There is another artist by the name of Kashana Armstrong, if you guys are familiar with Kashana. Jesus. Like, she's
my other mother.
Oh, my God. I want Kashana to be my mother. Like, we're just... Kashana's incredible. And I, if you've seen any of my shows, the song Old Black Southern Woman, I wrote that with Kashana. Love her. And, you know, any of these people up here are incredible. And I actually sent you to my daughter. And she wrote me back, and she was like, "Mom, she's so good." She's like, "Is she? Are you guys friends?" And I was like, "Sure."
On our way.
So yeah, like I like giving my child recommendations because she actually has good taste in music. Go figure. And you can actually, this is not a plug for the show, but kinda, if you go to the Color Me Country playlist on Apple Music, it is literally everything that I love, that I'm listening to, that I play on my show, and it is all exclusively people of color, marginalized people, queer people, everybody. So, yeah.
Everybody should be listening to Color Me Country because that is where the future of country music is being spoken about.
I hope so.
No, I really feel
I
that
hope
way.
So.
Did we want to do a lightning round question? We want to ask you some silly questions, you guys.
We didn't hear what everybody else was
okay.
listening
I wanted,
to. Right?
I do want to know what you guys are listening to, but I also want to be silly. Okay, what are you listening to?
I mean, anything that I might have been listening to before the boat has been kicked out of my brain for all of the stuff that I've listened to on the boat.
No, literally.
I feel insanely like maybe I feel like a new rabid fan of Palmyra.
Yes.
And Victoria Canal and Judy Blank and just but I was just saying I was supposed to go to the spa. I haven't gone to the spa at all because I bought this pass and I haven't been at all because I just keep going to see music because it's so amazing. So yeah, and I'm so excited to see Joey play later because I haven't seen
what
him
time
play
is
yet,
your set, Joby, and where?
I think it's now at 4:30. Hello, in Magnums.
Great.
They moved everything today.
That's a new song.
We are writing
Riccio.
Some good songs
the
on
hit,
stage
man,
today.
I don't know who just came into my body, but that was cool.
I'm also reading Patti Smith's newest biography, Bread of Angels, and
awesome.
Yeah, it's very into like biographies right now. Deborah Levy has a trio of books that I just finished.
Yes.
About like home and relationship, and Miriam Toews, who wrote Women Talking. Uh-huh. She has this like small biographical book. It's just brilliant. I just like want to follow these women as they like wander through their thoughts.
Oh, amazing.
I love it.
Have you read Roseanne Cash's biography, Composed?
No, not yet.
It's so good. I love a memoir by a great musician, especially a great woman musician.
Okay, well, it's my turn. I will say I feel like you, Lizzie, have been turning me on to new music, specifically country music. Lizzie made me a playlist because I said, can you...
I want that.
Yeah.
Can we I am the country music girly in the friend group. I will make you a country playlist upon request.
Yeah. And so, I mean, these are probably known names to everybody here, but I feel like Tanner, Adele, Charlie Crockett. I've been like, yeah, just discovering some bops.
Tanner is that new new.
She is.
She is the next generation of country. I'm so proud of Tanner.
Yeah. And I was reading Martha Wainwright's biography, which is, I'm just in it for the gossip, because that whole family, it's a family of songwriters, come on. Kate McGarrigle, Loudon Wainwright, Rufus Wainwright, and they're all just writing songs about each other, so it's like, that. This is my Kardashians, so I've really been enjoying that.
Give those guys a show.
Can I ask the silly questions now, Cindy?
Wait.
Joby,
I want to know.
Okay. I've been avoiding the question because I'm going to butcher a lot of names. So I'm listening to S.A.S. Contreras, this album by Orlando Contreras. Oh, fuck my life. I think it's Contreras. I could be wrong.
Contreras.
Okay, I'm seeing some nods. I heard it in an Uber in Miami on the way to the cruise, and I was obsessed, and I downloaded it before the cruise. And then I have been listening to this Brazilian album. And yes, I'm looking on my phone. I got it when I was 13. So sorry. it's broken me like a horse. Listening to this Brazilian album that's got this really fabulous female guitar player. Her name is Rosina de Valencia, I think. Oh, boy.
You're doing great.
And yeah, it's... I can't... The name of the album, Viola en Primero Plano. And then what I'm reading... It's so good. It's so good. What I'm reading is this book called There's Always This Year.
Oh, Hanif.
Hanif, yes. And I don't remember his last name.
Abdurraqib. Hanif Abdurraqib.
Hell yes. Writer. So glad to have a phone a friend. Because I was like, I don't remember the author's last name. It's really, really good. I'm on the last chapter. It's a book about basketball and hope. And if you know me, I don't really like sports except for soccer. I was actually bullied off of my basketball team for being so bad at basketball. So it's actually amazing. Like, this just says how good of a writer this guy is. He's actually a music writer, no?
Correct. Music writer, podcaster, and homie.
Your friends?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well,
you
I'm obsessed.
You never know who I know, Joby.
I'm obsessed
Riccio.
With his writing. I'm, like, upset. Like, this is such a... I've read it in almost a week. It's such a good book. I highly recommend. It's about Cleveland. It's about being black. It's a wonderful book. I highly recommend it. It was...
There's always this year.
Yes. I'm learning a lot about Ohio and basketball. And, the name of my team was the Jumping Shrimps.
And you got kicked
That's it.
Off.
And you didn't even make the cut for the Jumping Shrimps.
No, they didn't invite me to the sleepover.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Joby.
Yeah, there's a reason why I didn't like sports until, like, adulthood. And now I watch soccer, and I'm like, because there's, like, women and gay people. And, like, it's more diverse. I'm like, this is my safe space.
Would you like to do the lightning round, Lizzie?
I'm dying to do the lightning round. I want to know from each person, what is the most important thing that you forgot to pack for Kayamo?
Sunscreen.
Oh, no.
Like, how do you go to the beach without damn sunscreen? I did.
I get it. You look great, though, Kaya.
Thank you. I did not forget to pack anything because I'm a Virgo.
You. Good for you. Rose, we're lightning round. I'm rushing through these people.
I'm good. I had everything I needed.
Liquid IV.
I have some.
Oh, word.
I have some. You can.
What is in your emotional beach bag?
My therapist number.
Mm-hmm. pass.
Lip balm.
Yes.
A Rush of Blood to the Head by Coldplay.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
What is the ideal number of pairs of shoes to bring on tour?
A separate ideal suitcase.
The ideal number of pairs of shoes to bring on tour.
A separate suitcase. I literally went on tour last year and brought a band-sized suitcase, and everyone made fun of me because they only said we could only bring one. So if I'm going to bring one, it's going to be a massive one.
But we doesn't include the front woman. You can bring what you want.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I would say three airport shoes. Number one, airport shoes. Number two, performance shoes. Number three, running shoes.
Mm-hmm. One pair.
Yes, yep. Just one. No, Reese, it's getting bleak in this generation. Austerity has hit millennial folk singers hard.
Who are you people? Right.
I would also say three. Yes. Like you want to have a pair that you could wear outside, but also maybe on stage. Definitely runners for the gym, mm-hmm. And then one other, depending on the climate.
ETC.
Unfortunately, I'm also team three.
What?
I'm so sorry.
You're fancy, though. I feel so fancy.
Maybe I'm extra. Am I extra?
As you should be.
What?
You're everything.
I
want to be everything.
Am I a drama?
Let's see. Audience, team three, round of applause.
Practical ladies.
Team Reese.
All right. Team six or more. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. We have one last silly question for our illustrious panel, and I want to thank each and every one of you for being a part of this, and I want to encourage everybody to go to the merch store and purchase physical copies of albums by Joby Riccio, Rose Cousins, Kaya Cater, and Reese Palmer. Our last question is, what's your favorite silly pump-up song?
Party Rock Anthem?
Oh, yeah.
This is me doing my makeup. Party Rock is in that. Like, I love it. Just, it's dumb.
Yeah. I sometimes put on a song by the Wiggles. I can't remember what the name is, but it's really good. You like move your body and you hop up and down and you like dance around. It gets me out of my head. Yeah, it's good.
I need a pump up song.
Yeah.
I have leaned into Beyonce many, many times, but I feel like I'm missing a piece of my routine without a pump-up song, so noted.
Recently, it's been that like Daft Punk song that's like, around the world, around the world. Sorry, you didn't know there would be a performance of it.
Amazing answers.
What's yours?
My pump-up song is Desperado by Rihanna.
Yes. Ooh, yes.
I thought you were going to say by Linda Ronstadt, and I was like...
Pump down!
Like pump you up!
Pump down!
Yeah.
Pump up to get down.
Yeah. Down to the floor.
My pump-up song recently has been one of my baby's favorite songs. It's that song that was in Juno that's like, if I was a flower going wild and free, I wanted you, my sweet honeybee.
And with that, this has been the Basic Folk Coffee and Conversation.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for being with us today.
Have a great day.
This episode of Basic Folk was produced by C.J. Nungesser. Our music composed by Dietrich Strauss. Basic Folk is a production of The Bluegrass Situation. You can find all of our episodes there. You can search for Basic Folk on the SiriusXM app. You can find us on folkalley.com or their mobile app. You can go to basicfolk.com or you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, we suggest sharing it with a friend, perhaps everyone in your Rolodex, because who wouldn't enjoy this conversation? Thanks a lot for listening all the way to the end. Bye.